It's Mark Levin. Join me weekdays 3 to 6 p.m. on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Back we are. John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I want to welcome to our airwaves Congressman Rick Larson from the 2nd Congressional District. Starts in the Muckleteal area, goes all the way up to the Canadian border. Do I have that right, Congressman?
Well, with redistricting, you're almost right. It's now Snohomish County, King County border up to Bellingham. So, it's the district shrank a little bit, but still a lot of folks to represent.
That's right, because the 1st District... Okay, very good. I appreciate the clarification. Wanted to talk to you about Obamacare, and I'm not going to get into the issue so much of shutdown versus funding, because eventually, Obamacare will be funded.
I agree with that.
I don't know what the timeline will be, but I want to ask what I think is a very fair question, and that is Obamacare really ready to roll out? Is it prepared? I don't think it is. I think the president of the United States doesn't think it is either, which is why he's delayed the employer mandate and some other aspects of the law. I'm wondering if we wouldn't be better off delaying the health care exchanges for a year, because, as you know, people will get subsidies to buy insurance on these exchanges. And so far, Kathleen Sebelius says she doesn't know how to verify their incomes to know if they deserve subsidies. So she's just taking their word on it. Why would we not verify people's income before spending billions on insurance subsidies?
First off, I would say that we are going to implement the exchanges. There is an argument in Congress, mainly from on the Republican side, that we should delay Obamacare for a year. But I'd push back a little bit on that argument, because the experience over the last 2 years has been an attempt to repeal all or parts of Obamacare, in fact, 42 different times, once every 24 days on average. So I really have trouble trusting my Republican colleagues that they really only want to delay it for a year. But the other thing, the other broader point is we need to implement this bill, this law, and make adjustments. No law is perfect. No law has ever been perfect. This one, we will find hiccups and hurdles in it, and we'll have to fix those as we go along, like we've done with most every law Congress has ever passed. But let's implement this. Washington State is ready. Folks can start signing up on October 1st here in the health exchange here in Washington State.
So did the president do the right thing in delaying the employer mandate?
I don't think that he did, but he did.
Okay.
I think we should just have moved forward and implement things, and if things, if there are hurdles, if there are hiccups in place, then we make those adjustments as we get there, as opposed to, prejudging that things are not going to go poorly, or, prejudging that things are going to go well.
Okay, as you know, one of the reasons we had a mortgage meltdown is that we were reaching the point where people were getting loans without having their income or employment status verified. And these healthcare exchanges will subsidize people. They'll give people public money to buy insurance without verifying whether they actually need or deserve or qualify for the money. Why don't you delay the exchanges until you can at least do that?
I think that's a fair question, John. But I would also note that most folks aren't going to try to cheat the system. And for those who do, will be punished according to the law. It's not like in year one, when people sign up and income isn't verified, that at some point in the future that the income won't be verified for year one. It's just not going to be able to take place now. But in year two, we'll be able to verify for income for year two and year one as well. And we'll get the scoff laws then.
Yeah, but will you really get them, or will they just lose their subsidy?
I would not recommend to anybody that they try to defraud the government or anyone, because we get after people and punish them according to the law.
Here's my next question, and that is, as you know, the Affordable Care Act was supposed to have Congress live under the Affordable Care Act by obtaining insurance for both members and staff on the exchanges.
Right.
And apparently, a lot of people weren't noticing this, and a movement began, and frankly, it involved some members from both parties, to restore public subsidies to health care plans. And I'm thinking, well, here we...
You're mixing up two things. The law said nothing about the premium assistance or subsidy that Congress and staff get as federal employees. It says nothing about that. The only thing the law says is that members of Congress and their staff have to purchase from the exchanges. That's all it says.
Well, the final bill had no mention of the premium contributions the government makes to federal employees as part of the federal employees' health benefit program.
Silent.
Right? So now there was this ongoing campaign to get a carve-out for the president to tell the Office of Personnel Management to start providing public subsidies. Why should you guys not live under the same Obamacare law you want everyone else to live under?
Well, we do. I think you're mixing up two things, or the argument that folks are making is mixing up two things. The law doesn't say that members of Congress as federal employees no longer get the premium contribution. It doesn't say anything about that. It only says that we purchase a health care plan through the exchange. That's what it says. And so the rule for members of Congress on having to change their health plan is that, very simply, by law, members of Congress have to change their health care plans. But the law, says again, is silent on this premium contribution that members of Congress and their staff get as federal employees.
Okay, well,
It's only being federal employees. I would argue people are conflating or mixing up the two. In large part because people generally have very low approval ratings of members of Congress, and they see this as a perk that we're otherwise hadn't been giving, but it's a premium contribution as a result of being federal employees, and it continues.
But that's the point. Rather than continuing, why not change to getting your health insurance through the Obamacare Affordable Care Act program, rather than maintain the program that you already have, the health care program you already have?
I don't get to maintain the health care plan I already have. I have to, and I'm not complaining, but the truth is I have to drop the health care plan I currently have and purchase a different one through an exchange. I would prefer to keep my current health care plan, but the law says I will not, and so I'm not going to.
And you will get a public subsidy to do so?
I will continue to receive, as a federal employee, the premium contribution that I've been receiving as a member of Congress since being elected in 2000,
and
like every member of Congress, Democrats and Republicans.
And you weren't going to get, and your staff was not going to get that until the president, under lobbying from Congress, stepped in and ordered the director of the Office of Personnel Management to make the subsidies available.
No, I disagree with that statement. No. I wasn't.
On what ground?
It was unclear. You said I wasn't going to get it. Actually, it was just unclear.
Then why did the president need to tell OPM to do anything?
Because it was unclear. People believed it was unclear, and so the president clarified it for OPM.
Okay, because, for instance, Senator Johnson from Wisconsin, he put
worth $60 billion or something.
No. What he did was he put money aside in his budget, in his congressional budget, to supplement the staff's health care costs in anticipation of the new law taking effect. So he was ready.
Good for him. He probably has a staff making $10,000 a year trying to live in Washington, D.C. as well. I have no idea what he has done, and I frankly don't care what Senator Johnson has done. I know my staff works hard. We pay them very little by a lot of standards, including the cost of living in Washington, D.C. And I'm going to stand up for them and make sure that they continue, as a federal employee, to get the premium contribution that all federal employees get. They have to change their health care plans, too, as a result of the law.
Right, but you're standing behind them with the taxpayers' money, right?
They're public employees. We're all public employees. That's how we get paid. We don't pay public employees with private money. That would be wrong.
I've got your press release talking about what you're trying to do to improve the economy in the Northwest. And earlier this morning, I was talking about a guy named Bob Funk, who is the president and founder of one of America's largest employment agencies. And what he does is he puts about 500,000 people into jobs every year, from CFOs to clerk typists, construction workers, everything. And when he was asked what Washington, D.C. can do to get Americans back to work, here is what he said. Again, he's run this company for 30 years. He said the first step would be to shrink, quote, the vast social welfare state programs that have become a substitute for work. There's a prevalent attitude of a lot of this generation of workers, he's talking younger workers, millennials, that the government will always be there to take care of them. It's hard to get people to take entry-level jobs when they can get unemployment benefits, health care, food stamps, and the rest. He mentions the food stamp debate, where your party voted unanimously against work requirements. And he said the Democrats are living in a fantasy world. He says that Congress's decision in 2009 to increase unemployment insurance benefits to 90 weeks or more was a, quote, a policy that held a lot of people out of the workforce until the checks stopped coming. We saw that here very clearly, close quote. Again, he's in the business of putting people to work. He says that the social safety net, if you will, has become something of a hammock, and that a lot of people won't take jobs on which you would need to start the stepladder toward better-paying jobs.
Yes.
Well, what's your take on that?
I haven't read Bob Funk's statement or...
I just read it to you. You don't need to read it.
I do. I need to get some perspective on him. I don't know kind of the perspective he's coming from on this, except that to say that there are folks who do need food stamps to put food on the table. Unemployment compensation has helped people stay afloat until they get back to work. So if he is, you know, taking this broad brush, and just saying it's all bad, I can show him many examples.
No, he's talking about the net effect.
He has
600 offices across the country, and he's in the business of putting Americans to work.
But if he's saying that there are changes that we can make, sure. Frankly, I think that we made the right choice in the Recovery Act to extend and expand unemployment benefits for a certain period of time until the economy recovers, and now that it is recovering, we do need to pull back on that. There are some in my party who wanted to make the unemployment compensation the new standard.
But you just voted against pulling back on food stamp, even work requirements,
The vote. You're mischaracterizing the vote on food stamps. If you look at the entire changes that the House Republican majority wanted to make the food stamp program, you would see it went well beyond any enhancements or additions that we made as part of the Recovery Act. I'll give you a number. On November 1st, the Recovery Act enhancements, additions to the food stamp program go into, actually get reversed.
Okay.
Some people are calling that a cut. I don't call it a cut. I call it the fact that recovery is going on. We're bringing food stamp levels back down to a food stamp benefit back down to where they were largely before the recession went into place.
Okay,
because
the Republicans wanted to cut 5% from a program that's doubled in 5 years. That doesn't sound like a cold callous thing to do. But I want to read a little more from this business executive who's in the business of putting Americans back to work through his employment agency. He says, I guess I'm a little prejudiced to immigrants and especially Hispanics. They have an amazing work ethic. They don't want handouts. They're grateful to have a job. Our company has great success with these workers. But he says among millennials, he says, they often come knocking on his door, and they view a paycheck as a kind of entitlement, not something to be earned. He says, in my 40-plus years in this business, the biggest change I've witnessed is the erosion of the American work ethic. And he blames the expansion of the welfare state for doing that. What's your take?
He's free to have his opinion. I don't blame his opinion for the problem. His opinion.
It's pretty informed opinion. It's based on what he sees.
Sure. Lots of opinions are informed. A lot of them are uninformed. It's based on what he sees. I agree it's based on what he sees, John. I agree that it's based on what he sees. But how does he define this? Does he think that if we're going to be building transportation projects with public money that put people to work, that that is wrong, too? Does he think that if we use public money to fund cutting-edge research at the University of Washington that can save lives in the future, is that public money that we shouldn't spend as well?
Not when you're running massive deficits.
He sort of makes I'm not saying that there aren't problems in the social safety net. There are. And there are areas where on entitlements where we need to be more aggressive on limiting things. But on this food stamp debate these days, there are food banks operating largely through private donations all over my district. That's where I kind of spend my time, and very little government money. And the food stamp program helps largely supplement what people get at food banks. It doesn't replace it, but they wouldn't be putting food on the table without it. And he could have a broader perspective as well than just. He's got a great perspective as a businessman, it sounds like, but he could have an even broader perspective if he spent time in local food banks.
Well, he's looking at it from the perspective of someone who's in the business of putting people into jobs and what he's seen change over the years. And I just found
we always look at things from where we sit at the table.
Well, yeah,
sometimes he's sitting to get off the table and get off that table and get to a different one to see.
Actually,
how it's
he's in the real world. And
that's
a world
part of the real world. There's a real world taking place at food banks all over this state right now where people need these food banks and they need food stamps as well to supplement what they get. That's their real world.
How many Americans now on food stamps?
46.
47.7 million.
Yeah.
It's great having you here, as always, Rick. Thanks for making the time.
Sure, John. Thanks a lot.
That's Congressman Rick Larson from the 2nd Congressional District joining me here on Talk Radio 570 KVI.